Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, September 12th, Sunday, September 13th, and Monday, September 14th. We'll begin with page one of Saturday's paper. The headline reads, Solemn Day. Twin City firefighters remember lives lost on 9/11. Bloomington and Normal active and retired firefighters remembered 343 fallen brothers on Friday. It's just tough, retired Bloomington firefighter Roger Troxell said Friday, following a 9/11 remembrance ceremony at the Bloomington Firefighters Memorial at Miller Park. It's heartfelt, Troxell said with tears in his eyes. I can't talk about it without getting a little emotional. It's been 19 years, and I still do. 343 firefighters died that day, he said. All told, about 3,000 people died following the September 11th, 2001, terrorist attack on New York City, Washington, D.C., and Pennsylvania. Bloomington firefighters in Honor Color Guard of American Legion Post 635 in Normal and Post 56 in Bloomington hosted the 9/11 remembrance ceremony, which attracted about 30 active and retired firefighters, members of the Honor Color Guard, and about 20 members of the public. Today is a very solemn day for the fire service in America, Matt Musson, a firefighter, paramedic, and member of the Bloomington Local 49 Honor Guard, said during the ceremony. Musson also noted that 60 police officers died on 9/11. Today, we are here to honor all those lives lost, he said. In addition to a moment of silence and Musson's reading of the firefighter's prayer, the ceremony included a presentation of the flag-by-flag bearer Tom Laskowski and riflemen Mike Scott and Roger Kahn, all members of the Honor Color Guard and of Post 635. Sounding of taps on the trumpet by Tom Fatten, a member of the Sons of the American Legion, and Troxell performing Amazing Grace on the bagpipes, joined by retired Normal firefighter John Gussing on the drums. Gussing and Troxell are members of the Associated Firefighters of Illinois Honor Guard, and as firefighters, both went to New York City following 9/11. They attended funerals of firefighters who died on September 11th, visited with members of Engine Company 21 near Ground Zero, and went to Ground Zero, the remains of the World Trade Center, where most of the September 11th victims perished after terrorists flew planes into the Twin Towers. Gussing was there when remains of a firefighter were found and became part of an honor guard as the remains were removed. The experiences prompted Troxell to learn to play the bagpipe so he could become a part of the AFFI Honor Guard. It still feels like we lost a part of the family, Gussing said after Friday's ceremony. Firefighters have a brotherhood and sisterhood that people outside the fire service may have difficulty understanding, Gussing said. It stems in parts from the fact that firefighters risk their lives for others and for each other. When you save someone's life, you become brothers, Gussing said. It's changed all of our lives that day, Bloomington Deputy Fire Chief Eric West said after the ceremony. We're here to honor those firefighters who gave their lives on 9/11 and the other citizens who perished that day, West said. Every once in a while, it's good to remember people who are willing to risk their lives to save others, Gussing said. West said, losing that many people on our soil is important to remember what happened that day so it doesn't happen again. But there's another reason to remember. It has to do with what happened in central Illinois and throughout the United States after September 11th, 2001. What happened in the weeks after September 11th was this country came together, West said. We became more patriotic. We need to bring the country back together. The divisiveness now, I hate to see it. What everybody was doing for each other after September 11th was amazing. We've lost that. I hope we can bring that back. Gussing said, for me, this is a day to reflect on 9/11 and what the guys accomplished that day. It was the largest rescue operation in firefighters' history. As time goes by, it becomes a footnote in history, Grussing said. We don't want to forget our brothers and what they did that day. For what those guys did, Grussing said, we honor them by doing the best we can every day. On 9/11 and afterwards, people did things they didn't think they were capable of doing, said Scott, commander of the Honor Color Guard and an Army veteran. That should be kind of a guidepost for all of our lives, Scott said. And from page A3, the headline reads, Businesses to Get Masks. UniFirst gives 10,000 masks and sanitizer to Chamber to share. A donation of 10,000 masks and several cases of surface sanitizer, will help McLean County businesses to remain open safely as the number of county COVID-19 cases increase, the president and CEO of the County Chamber of Commerce said on Thursday. Finding safety products such as the mask has been difficult at the best of times, Charlie Moore said. UniFirst's donation of 10,000 masks as well as bottles of sanitizer is tremendous. UniFirst Corporation, based in Massachusetts, supplies workwear, protective clothing, floor care, and safety products to businesses throughout North America. On Thursday, UniFirst location manager Lance Doherty presented to Moore a donation of 10,000 masks as well as cases of cleaning sanitizer, Moore said. The donation is part of UniFirst's initiative to support businesses in UniFirst markets nationwide. Moore said the masks and sanitizer will be available to McLean County businesses to pick up at the Chamber office, 2203 East Empire Street in Bloomington, from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. The product will also be available at outdoor Chamber events during the next 2 weeks or until the supplies run out, he said. UniFirst investment will help keep the community safe and dovetails with the Community Confident, the local campaign to support businesses and reassure consumers, Moore said. The campaign, launched in June, encourages businesses to pledge that they will follow guidelines that promote consumer and employee health, including social distancing, hand washing, staying home when sick, sanitizing surfaces, limiting customers, and encouraging mask wearing. Businesses that agree to take the pledge at www.community-confident.com are also listed on the website, which also has resources to help. At a time that we are seeing our COVID-19 cases rise significantly, it's important to us as a Chamber of Commerce that we do all we can to keep our businesses open with health and safety top of mind, and also to keep our ISU, Illinois State University, and IWU, Illinois Wesleyan University, students here, Moore said. And from page A3 of Saturday's paper, the headline reads, Heritage may help COVID-19 drug tests. Some residents and staff of Bloomington-based Heritage Operation Group's long-term care facilities may become test candidates if they volunteer for the Phase 3 trial of a drug to prevent COVID-19. The facilities could include Heritage Skilled Nursing, such as Heritage Health in Bloomington and Normal, as well as a Heritage Assisted Living and Supported Living facilities. That includes 45 facilities in Illinois, 34 skilled nursing, 7 supportive living, and 4 assisted living, including 40 in Central Illinois, said Heritage President and CEO Benjamin Hart. Any resident or staff members who have not previously tested positive for COVID-19 could be eligible to participate in the trial, Hart told the Pantograph. Participation is voluntary, he said. Heritage announced on Friday that it has entered into an agreement with Lilly manufacturer Eli Lilly and Company of Indianapolis to initiate a Phase 3 drug trial named Blaze 2, of Eli Lilly's COVID-19 antibody drug called LY-CoV-555. The trial drug would be used for the prevention of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. And COVID-19 in residents and staff of skilled nursing assisted living and supporting living facility. This is a stage 3 double-blind, placebo-based experimental drug, and participation is solely voluntary, Hart said. Lilly is seeking approval of this drug for treatment and prevention of COVID from the FDA, and this is the final stage of drug trial. After a new COVID case called an index case is identified at a facility, Eli Lilly would deploy a mobile research unit and team to the facility, Hart explained. So the trial only would take place at facilities where a new COVID case is identified. They are looking for an index case to establish a baseline because their trial requires the antibody medication to be administered within 7 days of the onset of a positive COVID-19 case, Hart explained. A mobile research unit would include 2 converted RVs that would bring all the medical operations. The team would be about 10 Lilly staff members, Hart said. They will enroll participants and administer on-site the trial medication, which is given as an IV infusion, he said. We are thrilled to be working with Eli Lilly and assisting them on their development of this potentially important COVID-19 treatment, Hart said in a statement. So far, we have been able to offer few options other than infection control measures and palliative care. This partnership with Eli Lilly offers our residents and employees a sense of hope and gives us an opportunity to be on the offensive against this terrible disease, which has disproportionately impacted the elderly population. Also from page 3, the headline reads, Grampsus sentenced to 45 years. Decatur man found guilty of 2018 Dover murder and robbery. A Decatur man was sentenced to 45 years in prison Friday for his role in the murder of a Bloomington man in December of 2018. Anthony Grampsus, 20, was found guilty in July of first-degree murder during a home invasion. Prosecutors say he drove 2 other men, including co-defendant Tywan Bruce, 21, to Egerton Dover's home so they could rob him of cannabis. During the robbery, Dover was shot 3 times and died. A third person police have said was involved, Curtis Hairston, 18, died during a 2019 shooting inside a Decatur restaurant. Bruce was found guilty of murder last month and will be sentenced October 8th. Grampsus charges were filed under legal accountability laws that allow a person to be charged if the death occurred during the commission of a forcible felony. The jury acquitted him on charges of robbery and of murder related to robbery. Grampsus, who remains in custody of the McLean County Sheriff's Office, waived his rights to be present during the sentencing hearing, said Friday at the McLean County Law and Justice Center. Justice Scott Drazewski granted the request and read him his rights to appeal before releasing him back to his cell. But when issuing the sentence, Drazewski made note of his absence, his cowardice, and not allowing the victims to obtain closure and to hear what they had to say, demonstrates no empathy and no remorse, Drazewski said. It shows he just cares about himself and his needs. Grampsus' absence did not stop the victim's mother, Rhonda Dover, from speaking out. Egerton was a sure joy. He was funny, sharp-witted, and had a genuine care for others, she said. Egerton mattered to those who knew and loved him. His loss has devastated me, his family, and friends. The grief is immeasurable, and simple words can't express it. The judge said Grampsus refused to participate with officials in the pre-sentencing investigation report, but investigators found plenty to fill the report. His first brush with the law came when he was just 11 years old, and his first charge, a domestic violence incident, came when he was 13. It shows a history of defiance, and there are countless incidents of abuse to his family, including his parents. That includes physical assaults to family and law enforcement officers, Drazewski said. The defendant has demonstrated he doesn't like to listen. Grampsus' charges were made under legal accountability laws that allow a person to be charged if the death occurred during the commission of a forcible felony. And the jury acquitted him on charges of robbery and of murder related to robbery. Jack McQueen, the crime and analyst supervisor at the Bloomington Police Department, testified that Gramsis was in a hybrid gang and was hurt in a shooting incident in Bloomington in August of 2016. Gramsis was one of three people injured in the shootout, which involved two local gangs, McQueen said. His social media posts were constantly monitored and often displayed guns. He came on the radar in the summer of 2015, McQueen said. He was a constant presence. Assistant State's Attorney Mary Lawson asked the judge for a 60-year sentence. This crime was senseless, and it was needless, she said. Egerton lost his life for drugs, money, and property. His life had so much possibility, but the defendant didn't care. What we see is an individual who, despite his background and opportunities, chose a lifestyle that is not indicative of any type of rehabilitation. Gramsis' defense attorney, Steve Skelton, argued for a 35-year sentence. We are dealing with a horrible tragedy, and I can only extend my condolences to the Dover family, he said. This is exceptionally tragic. He apparently had a great deal of potential and was very well thought of in his community. Gramsis was 18 at the time of the shooting. Based on the pre-sentencing report, he had a troubled period of time in his younger years, Skelton added. I don't know what his personal demons are. Gramsis still has three pending felony cases not related to the shooting. Those include a theft and criminal damage to government property charge in McLean County and an armed robbery charge in Macon County. If convicted of any or all of those charges, those sentences would be added to his current 45-year sentence. And another article from page 3. Headline is Normal Township to install solar panels at ARC. The Normal Township plans to add solar panels to its activity and recreation center in early 2021. Illinois Solar for All program recently approved funding for the Normal Township to build a solar array at the Activity Center, 600 East Willow Street in Normal. The solar array is an investment in the continued long-term success of ARC, our senior center, which continues to be a top priority for the township. Normal Township Supervisor Sarah Grammer said in a statement Thursday, "This is yet another example of how the Normal Township Board has worked to creatively improve finances for the Senior Center without raising taxes or membership fees," says Grammer. Illinois Solar for All will finance $549,661 of the $600,000 project, so there's no upfront cost to the township for installing the system, she said. The township will continue to pay a small monthly amount based on power consumption and will own the system after 6 years. The panels built by Straight Up Solar of Bloomington have a 25-year warranty and life expectancy of 30 to 35 years. They are expected to save the senior center $25,934 within its first year and $521,325 over a 15-year period. A grassroots effort by the Ecology Action Center inspired the Normal Township to bring solar panels to the Activity Center. Leadership with the EAC played a key role in educating the township and making connections with local installers. Grammer added that the project has been over a year in the making, and Normal Township is extremely excited to have the array approved for funding. And from page A5, Crime Stoppers and police seek man on felony DUI charge. Crime Stoppers of McLean County need the public's help in finding a person who is wanted for felony charges. Brandon Scott Missile, 26, is 6 feet tall and weighs 180 pounds. He has brown hair and blue eyes. His last known address is in Bloomington. He's wanted on a charge of aggravated driving under the influence. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of up to $1,000 for information leading to the arrest and indictment of people who commit felony crimes in McLean County. call 309-828-1111 with information. Another headline, state claims suspect held a torch to woman's face. A Bloomington man remains in McLean County Jail after he threatened a woman and held a butane torch to her face last week, prosecutors say. Alan Marshall, 44, was charged with aggravated domestic battery, a Class 2 felony, domestic battery with prior conviction, and unlawful restraint, both Class 4 felonies. He remains in McLean County Jail with no bond. A bond review hearing is scheduled for Monday. Prosecutors say the incident occurred September 4th when he barricaded the front door so a woman could not leave. During the incident, he lit a butane torch to her face and threatened her with a knife, authorities said. The victim was transported to a local hospital, treated for cuts and bruises, and released. Marshall was also treated and released at a hospital. And from Sunday's paper, page one, the headline reads, Flocking Online. Farmers market vendors sell through a new service. For over a decade, warm weather for Katie Bishop meant bundling up zucchini, onions, tomatoes, and other produce and hauling them from her Atlanta farm to the downtown Bloomington Farmers Market. But this year was different. The COVID-19 pandemic's arrival in mid-March sent vendors like Bishop scrambling to get their products to customers. Bloomington's market was among those that pivoted to an online curbside pickup hybrid market in the spring before returning to modified operation in early summer. Some vendors also began delivering right to customers' doors. Demand was high. Particularly in the first weeks of the pandemic, grocery stores were struggling to work out kinks with their supply chains and surging demand. Some customers also were reluctant or unable to venture out because of concerns about the rapidly spreading virus. Bishop and her husband Hans at Prairie Earth Farms took part in the curbside delivery option that Bloomington's market offered. That was absolutely incredible in April and early part of May when the community was responding to COVID and there were food shortages, said Bishop. The Downtown Bloomington Association really came through quickly on that. It was great because we all had this product and people wanted it and we didn't feel safe distributing it. In mid-June, Bloomington's Farmers Market opened for the outdoor season with some restrictions. Live music, kids' crafts, and other activities that fosters the market community's atmosphere were not allowed because of COVID-19 restrictions. Bishop and her employees returned to the market, pulling in sales and seeing customers again. But from the beginning, something didn't feel right to Bishop, who was worried for her employees' safety. When one of her employees tested positive for COVID-19, it became time to make some tough calls. Though they treasured in-person interaction with their customers, the Bishop pulled out of the farmer's market, citing concerns about keeping workers and employees safe. Left with an abundance of certain crops, Katie Bishop wasn't sure what her next move would be. That's when she learned about Market Wagon, a growing e-commerce business connecting farmers with customers through a virtual farmer's market. Dozens of Central Illinois vendors have started using the service since it arrived in the region in June, offering weekly deliveries to 11 counties in the region. Nick Carter, co-founder and CEO of Market Wagon, grew up on his family's Indiana farm but left at 18, noting that mass consolidation left less and less footing for smaller independent operations. The mantra in the 80s was, get big or get out, and we couldn't get big enough, said Carter, who went on to build a 10-year career in tech startups. As small farms began collapsing, facing loans, foreclosure, and bankruptcy, many were left searching for an alternative route, Carter said. At the same time, a new type of consumer demand was growing. People wanted organic, pasture-raised produce and meat from farmers they knew and trusted. In order to farm for another generation, most farmers are going to have to find a way to diversify their incomes and bring their food to the marketplace, said Carter. That's from Market Wagon Online at marketwagon.com or available as a smartphone app comes in. Launched in 2016, the service allows customers to place orders for items like heirloom tomatoes, sweet corn, fresh-baked sourdough bread from local vendors just as they might order a product on Amazon. The items are then delivered to their doors on a set day. The service began operating in the Indianapolis area and has expanded rapidly, fueled in part by the closure of in-person farmers markets because of COVID-19 concerns. The pandemic made food delivery a necessity for many households, he said. At the same time, it made farmers markets impossible. In June, the business arrived in central Illinois with a regional hub located in Bloomington. The central Illinois market serves 11 counties: McLean, Peoria, Woodford, Tazewell, Logan, DeWitt, Macon, Piatt, Champaign, Sangamon, and Christian. Market Wagon now operates in 14 cities across 7 states, and there are plans to increase its reach further. "We plan on having these open everywhere across the country," said Carter. Market Wagon Central Illinois offers more than 500 products from 51 vendors and artisans. Products range from meat, dairy, and seasonal produce to artisanal products such as jams, spices, and seasonings and baked goods. There are no subscriptions required, but there is a home delivery fee of $5.95. People can purchase a wagon pass, $14.95 per month, or $149 per year for free home delivery. Orders are shipped weekly on Thursdays from the Bloomington Regional Hub. Farmers and vendors drop off their products that morning, and delivery drivers begin transporting them that afternoon. Insulated packaging, ice packs, and other means are used to keep the products at the appropriate temperature. The service does not guarantee exact delivery times, but does send customers an email and text messages to let them know their orders have arrived. "With COVID, I think people are looking for fresh goods and maybe aren't making it out as often," said Robin Pletcher of Market Wagon Central Illinois Hub Coordinator. "I think it's a safe, easy way for customers to get their local goods." For Charlie Larkin, co-owner and operator of Above Normal Eggs in Normal, some sales have been down at in-person farmers markets, but in general, he noticed that more and more people want local produce these days. "It's just nice to get my name out there and possibly get into other farmers markets and stores in the future," said Larkin, who sells a variety of eggs, including chicken, duck, and quail eggs. For Candace Hart, owner of Pollen and Pastry in Bloomington, and Jeff Hackey, co-owners of Funk's Grove Heritage Fruits and Grains, Market Wagon is another way to hit a new customer base. Both Hart and Hackey offer products through a number of venues, such as farmers markets, store websites, and other grocery stores. But Market Wagon is a source for a steady income stream in addition to their businesses. "I think if Market Wagon continues on a weekly basis, it's going to be nice outlets for the off-season to be able to sell products on a weekly basis," Hart said. "It's been really great option for farmers to be able to have another outlet to sell our products." Others say they're reaching a wider customer base through a Market Wagon as opposed to attending several small farmers markets in areas, saving time and money. "It just works very smoothly," said Hockey. "It's been a great way to reach a whole new set of customers." And this has been Rita Schulte with part one of excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, September 12th, Sunday, September 13th, and Monday, September 14th. I will be right back in just a few moments with part two. Please stand by.